The pandemic has pushed us away from each other, even as we try to stay engaged with our friends and families.
You know, from domino games to church services, for instance, a lot of how we would connect with our communities has moved online. Hey, Lance.
Hey, Tom. Good morning. You're Tom Hudson, and you usually host the Sunshine Economy.
You are Lance Dixon, WLRN's digital editor. Social distancing is just that, right? Staying distant. It can make staying social and staying connected, though, pretty tough while also staying safe.
Yeah, I mean, how do you keep a sense of community while staying apart? You know, maybe you're a part of a bicycling group or you played cards with friends. Maybe you're politically active. So what does civic engagement look like during a pandemic? How do you stay connected to the people and issues you care about during this pandemic?
Yeah, share your story of staying connected while also staying distant and safe. 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN. WLRN Connects is next. Hey, Lance.
Hey, Tom. Good morning. You're Tom Hudson, and you usually host the Sunshine Economy.
You are Lance Dixon, WLRN's digital editor. Social distancing is just that, right? Staying distant. It can make staying social and staying connected, though, pretty tough while also staying safe.
Yeah, I mean, how do you keep a sense of community while staying apart? You know, maybe you're a part of a bicycling group or you played cards with friends. Maybe you're politically active. So what does civic engagement look like during a pandemic? How do you stay connected to the people and issues you care about during this pandemic?
Yeah, share your story of staying connected while also staying distant and safe. 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN. WLRN Connects is next.
Republican Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are among those targeted. Stephen McDonnell in Beijing says relations between the two countries are not improving.
Anybody who's been watching the relationship between Washington and Beijing can see that it's totally collapsing. I mean, last week I was speaking to some Chinese foreign ministry officials, and often they're sort of upbeat and diplomatic about these things, but they're just shaking their heads. I mean, I asked them how long it would take to repair the damage. They had no idea whatsoever. Look at all the fronts they're fighting on. The coronavirus, trade war, and now we have these human rights allegations. It's almost like they hardly have a front at the moment that they're not having a fight about.
Officials in northern Afghanistan say at least 10 people were killed and 50 others injured in an explosion near the regional intelligence building in Samangan province. Footage showed a huge plume of smoke in the provincial capital, Aibak. The Taliban said it carried out the attack. The Court of Arbitration for Sport has overturned a two-year ban from European competition on the English football club Manchester City and reduced a fine. It ruled the club had not disguised sponsorship funds to evade financial regulations. Our World Sports correspondent is Alex Capstick.
It's a real blow to UEFA and the credibility of its strategy to limit the amount of money clubs spend so they don't overreach themselves. Although financial fair play rules have been criticised for simply maintaining the current status quo whereby a few elite, rich clubs dominate the landscape. In a statement from UEFA, they said the regulations have played a significant role in protecting clubs and helping them become financially sustainable, and they remain committed to its principles. But I think it's fair to say that at the very least, UEFA will have to look again at the rules, and today's decision could even prompt further action from other clubs who've been found guilty of breaking them.
Continuing border clashes between the forces of Armenia and Azerbaijan have resulted in the deaths of four Azeri soldiers. Each side blames the other for provoking the violence. Rehan Dimitri reports.
Drone footage posted on Azerbaijan's defense ministry website appears to show an Armenian military position under attack on the border between the two countries. Azerbaijan accused the Armenian side of starting the fighting by firing artillery at an Azeri position in the western region of Tovuz on Sunday. The Armenian Defense Ministry, however, claims Azeri forces made two failed incursions into the Armenian territory. The fighting continued into the early hours of Monday morning. Armenia and Azerbaijan have been locked in a decades-long conflict over the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh.
This is the latest world news from the BBC.
This is WLRN News. I'm Christine DiMatte. For nearly 4 months, the state of Florida has not allowed visits to long-term or assisted living facilities during the COVID-19 pandemic. Last week, Governor Ron DeSantis extended that ban for 2 more months, but a new petition is demanding a way for family members to visit their loved ones. WJCT's Michelle Corum reports from Jacksonville.
Duval School Board member Lori Hershey has not been able to visit her mother in memory care since mid-March. When she has seen her mom, it's been through a window. Her mother has Alzheimer's, and Hershey says it's time to demand in-person visits. She started a petition that she says will go to Duval delegates and the governor.
I think loved ones are saying we've been patient long enough, and now we want to know why there are not guidelines in place for us to be able to visit our loved ones. Because when you have a loved one in an assisted care facility, even those with the best of care still need advocates.
She notes even some hospitals are allowing visits after screening. And as Hershey sees it, the separation is beginning to border on senior neglect. She understands the coronavirus can kill, but with precautions, she says family members should get limited visits.
Time is ticking, and I'm losing it. Time with her. She will probably not be here this time next year. And so while it's great to sit outside the window and share a milkshake with her, I would much rather just sit in her presence, be able to hold her hand and just sit with her.
Hershey started the petition this month, and it now has more than 1,000 signatures. I'm Michelle Corum in Jacksonville.
The petition can be found online at thepetitionsite.com. The name of the signature gathering campaign is Let Us Visit Loved Ones Now. This is WLRN News. I'm Christine DiMatte.
We're funded by WLRN members and by Nova Southeastern University. If you are ready to stop working for others and start your own business, NSU's MBA students can gain a competitive advantage through practical, professional, and immersive learning experiences. You can broaden your professional and personal network and pursue your goals in evening, weekend, or online classes. You can prepare for success and become a business leader. You can learn more at nova.edu/MBA.
This is WLRN Connects, a chance to connect and share stories. On this Monday, let's talk about staying connected to the people and issues you care about during the pandemic. I'm Lance Dixon.
Hey, Lance. Great to have you on the program. I'm Tom Hudson. We want to hear everyone's story, your story of staying connected during this pandemic. 800-743-9576. You know, we're getting used to Zoom and FaceTime, of course, 4 months into this pandemic. But really, how are you staying connected to that community you've created around you? 800-743-WLRN, our telephone number. We're also streaming live video in the 9 a.m. hour on WLRN's Facebook page and on our YouTube page.
Florida set a one-day record high of new COVID-19 cases yesterday, and more than 15,000 people were diagnosed with the virus statewide on a single day. The number of people tested also spiked, and the results come as parts of South Florida have retreated from some of those reopening rules that they had. This was the first weekend that restaurant dining rooms were closed again in Miami-Dade, and restaurants had to close by 10 p.m. in Broward County. And, you know, masks are mandatory in most places, and social distancing rules are still in place.
Yeah, you know, we're told to stay away from each other in order to stay safe. But staying away can obviously be pretty tough, you know, right? Church services, pick up soccer games, going boating, maybe attending a protest. A lot of how we would connect normally with our communities has moved online where it can. Zoom concerts have been happening, right, Lance? You know, even attending like a county or a city commission, a government meeting in order for public comment, that has moved mostly online. The pandemic has forced all these kind of social and civic gatherings into the virtual space. Even drive-in movie theaters or drive-in movie stadiums, as the case may be during this pandemic, we're still told, stay in your car. So we're kind of alone together in a crowd.
Yeah, definitely. Right now we're joined by Amanda Kreider. She's the founder and artistic director of Lumen Arts. Amanda, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Lance and Tom.
Yeah, definitely. So Amanda, you're involved, I know, with a lot of organizations here in South Florida and obviously with the Lumen Arts. And I'm just curious, even beyond that work that you do with your organization, how have you been finding ways to stay connected during all this?
This is such a great topic. And because I'm in the performing arts, it's, you know, something I'm passionate about, being able to still share with my community. both as a performer and as a producer. At LuminArts, we collaborate with museums and galleries around town to present programs of music that are inspired by the visual art in the space. And of course, all of the museums are closed and or limited capacity. And unfortunately, we can no longer gather as an audience to do concerts together. Something we launched at LuminArts to try to gather our community right at the beginning of the pandemic was an online concert series. And I heard Tom sort of make a joke about watching concerts online. It's not what it's not what we're trained to do.
No.
It's what we're, you know, it's what we're doing now. And I think people are hungry for arts and culture, and it's what we can do right now. Also, because, you know, this has been such a difficult economic time for everyone, and performing artists included, because all of our engagements have been canceled. This online concert series that we had, we collected ticket proceeds, and then all of those proceeds went to the artists who were performing as sort of an artist relief fund. So that's one of the things we're trying to do. We're looking at initiatives as we go into our 2021 season to possibly gather people outside in a safe, socially distanced way to share art and music. But we're still sort of finding our way with everything.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that, you know, a big thing for LuminArts is that you all really try to amplify the voices of these performers. I know there are a lot of usually community members or folks who might not have had like the most formal training with the arts, but you all are trying to give them a bit of a, you know, a bit of a platform. And so how has that part changed through all of this when you can't kind of have that face-to-face interaction with the performers or the other folks?
Yeah, you're right. We do especially try to highlight social issues in our programming. And I think in that way, we draw a broader audience of community members who may not have considered the type of music or the type of art that we are presenting. And it is a challenge to be performing in an online concert, for example, and not be able to engage with the audience. And just your question makes me want to like look at ways that we can try to engage people more, maybe in community conversations after the performance or before, to see how we can engage with community members and discuss important things that are affecting our community or our society at large. So thanks for the prompt, Lance.
Happy to help. And another thing I'm just kind of curious about, too, is, you know, I think early on in the pandemic, we saw a lot of charitable giving. And you mentioned that even, you know, the ticket sales have gone to benefit certain initiatives around supporting artists and things like that. Have you seen that kind of continue at a steady pace, like, you know, just people wanting to be engaged or as things like kind of reopened and people sort of got back to normal? Has that changed a bit?
Has changed a little bit. I think, you know, the economy is definitely struggling and there are different kinds of artist relief programs available, thank goodness. But I do want to encourage people to still support the arts and all organizations in their communities, because without that support, we can't continue our programming and the work that we do, whether it's in a social organization, an arts organization, nonprofits really depend on that kind of support. So I think it is very important to continue, even though we're all sort of struggling right now, to join together as a community and support our organizations.
Amanda, let me remind folks they can connect with us live during this 9 a.m. hour here on WLRN, 800-743-9576. That's our phone number, 800-743-9576. We're also streaming live during the 9 a.m. hour on our Facebook page and on our YouTube page at WLRN. Andrew sends us this nice note via the Facebook page. I love listening to WLRN. Great to hear that, Andrew. And, you know, Amanda, it reminded me, social media and doing things online for the public, you know, you're putting things out in spaces where people who may not be, to put it politely, fans of what you do and are looking to criticize, under the anonymity of social media. Have you encountered that at all, and kind of, or perhaps counteracted some of that with your artists and your contributors?
Well, I actually don't have experience with that. For personally, with Illuminarts, I think all performing artists have received bad reviews in our time. But it is, you know, something that I think we can protect against. But I can't say that I have direct experience with that.
Fair enough. I suppose that's a good thing, right? Not to have that kind of experience that can pour out on social media and really be divisive at the same time we're trying to talk as a community and come together as a community and address the pandemic and do what each of us individually can and do what collectively we can. Let's take a phone call. Bob is with us on line one from Fort Lauderdale. Bob, you are on the radio. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to share with you about online open mic on Zoom. I used to do like open mic at cafes, but with the shutdown, these have now shifted online. Most are on Zoom. They're free. You can find them on Eventbrite, meetup.com, openmic.org, and they're a lot of fun. I've played ones in India, England, New York, California in a single day if you work the time zone.
You've gone global, Bob.
Yeah, it's really amazing because, you know, I'm playing with people I never would have had exposure to. And it's good for a lot of people who are semi or fully shut in because I'm seeing a lot of people come to these who would have never been able to go to an open mic at a cafe because they were shut in for various reasons. So it's really opened up open mics for people who didn't have opportunities before.
Yeah. What's the experience, though, as a performer? Because those open mics, so much is about the energy in the room and the feedback you're receiving immediately from facial expressions or auditory feedback.
You still get that to some degree, and Zoom does have a feature called Original Sound, which you have to learn how to use so as it doesn't extract your music, because Zoom is set up for people talking. So it sees music, has background noise, and tries to take it out. But there are settings that are very easy to set that eliminate that. And the sound's pretty good. I usually do two or three a week now, at least, sometimes five, whereas before I'd maybe do one on a weekend.
Wow.
Wow, good to know.
And people tell you. They give you feedback.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that story, Bob. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. 800-743-9576, sharing your story of being connected here on WLRN Connects.
Definitely. And yeah, now we want to bring in Corey Davis. Corey, he's the co-founder and executive director of the Maven Leadership Collective. Corey, are you with us? Thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Definitely, definitely. Happy Monday to you. So, Corey, similarly to Amanda, I mean, I know that you're involved with a number of organizations also here in South Florida and lend some of your expertise and membership and things like that, even beyond your work with Maven. And so what's it been like for you, or how have you kind of had to adjust, you know, some of your outreach or connection to those organizations?
Well, I think that we've found new avenues for remaining connected. For us, Maven brings equity to social entrepreneurship. So for us, we've had to move a number of the trainings and conversations that we normally conduct in person to an online format. That means making sure that that content is lively, robust, and engaging across these new platforms, including Zoom. For us, the challenge has been assisting organizations who really are trying to navigate this conversation on racial reckoning and surviving the COVID economic downturn, and fostering a sense of diversity and belonging, even as we are social distancing. So that has been the way that I think things have been able to change. How is it that we create community and belonging, particularly for queer and trans people of color and our allies in an online space?
Definitely. Yeah. And you know, Corey, as I'm thinking about it to the caller, Bob's point, you know, have you found that because of the pandemic and because you've had to shift things online in this way, have you found that you've been able to reach out to folks who you might not have through an in-person workshop or something like that or a training session?
Yes, absolutely. I earlier, I guess last month, we conducted a online panel discussion with Jasmine Rogers Shaw out of Broward and Danielle Downer, wonderful HIV equity advocate out of Orlando. And we were able to host that through Zoom and across Facebook Live. And we were able to reach people in all parts of the country that normally would not be able to participate. And I think at a crucial time where we're really looking to have a greater sense of understanding of one another and how it is that we can advocate for the issues that we really care about, I think that that's a wonderful opportunity. And so for us, where we would have normally where we normally might have fielded 25 or 30 people for the conversation, we were able to bring in well over 100 at a really important time where people were looking at the protests and asking what they could do. And then obviously countless people have been able to view it over again since that time. So I really, while there are some challenges in this time of pandemic, I do think that it's also a time of great opportunity and creativity.
Gotcha. Awesome. And yeah, you know, someone on Facebook, Allison, she mentioned that she kind of liked the idea that these online engagements are really beneficial to disabled folks because, you know, they can reach out and they can attend Zoom concerts or open mics or these webinars or other meetings. And they might not have been able to access them before. And so, you know, yeah, there's still a lot of possibility, I guess, that comes out of this, even as things are tough. So, yeah,
there are. But you also have to be mindful in certain circumstances about accessibility on this platform. People who have neurodiversity or people who do not have access to reliable internet connections or computer or tablets at home. We want to make sure that we're always able to include them in the conversation, and to the extent possible that language justice in terms of translation, ASL are made available. That's something that I think as this becomes more and more pervasive as in terms of availability, I think that's something that we have to include in our budgets, that we have to include, you know, we have to include in our planning the concept of universal design as it relates to online content.
Corey, it's Tom. That bridging that digital divide is so important for folks that are creating content, in our case, news and information for people, but being really conscious of that digital divide, especially in this community in South Florida, and how significant that divide can be in our community because of the income gap that existed pre-COVID and has just been exacerbated with the pandemic. Corey, you talked a lot about the sense of belonging. And I want to bring Amanda back into the program and have both of you kind of talk about this community, creating the community during the pandemic from an audience's perspective. And I'm wondering about that because whether it's social issues, civic engagement that you're passionate about, or arts as a consumer, so much of that is experiencing it shoulder to shoulder and turning to someone else who you may not know, or introducing yourself to someone in that physical space prior to the pandemic, and having that sense of belonging or that sense of engagement with them, whether or not you agree with the issue, but just that sense of civic conversation that it can be so difficult to replicate online. Amanda, how is the audience experiencing that from an artistic standpoint?
First, I want to say good morning to Corey. Hi, Corey.
He's
one of our incredible board members for Illumin Arts, so our organizations are connected in a way. And for our online recital series, we did, in Zoom, there's the chat feature, and we left it open. And I had people respond to me after and say, I'm so glad that the chat was open because I got to have conversations with people during the concert. And it made me feel like I was watching with them. I've also attended webinars where that is not available. And I think it's a little bit of a shame because I think we do crave that connection with other people who are experiencing the same thing we're experiencing. I've also enjoyed question and answer sessions on these online webinars so that, you know, you feel like your voice is being heard if someone addresses your question in a webinar. And I'm really interested to hear what Corey has to say, too.
Yeah.
I think that one of the great ways to amplify the conversation has been the resources that people can immediately connect folks to in the conversation, particularly in the chat. So you drop our program evaluation. One of the most commented on features often is, I'm so glad that I was able to get a link to an article or to a resource that I could immediately act upon, and that bolsters whatever is being said. You know, online, often the conversation needs to be fact checked, and so it's nice that in real time we can do that, and so many people can participate in that. And because you're reaching a broader audience, you have that variety of experience. And so people can come at the conversation from so many different ways. But I think it's that you can convert the conversation to action in such a more robust way.
800-743-9576. That's the phone number here during the 9 a.m. hour to connect with us. 800-743-9576. Also, Lance and I are streaming online. The whole program is live video on Facebook Live and the WLRN YouTube page. You can provide comments there. In fact, Corey Allison sent us this note on Facebook. Great points, Corey. Thanks for highlighting those issues around accessibility and online content. I think Allison talking about the bridging of the digital divide. How else should we be thinking about that, both from a civic engagement point of view, Corey, and from an artistic consumption point of view, a creative point of view? How does this community think about that digital divide that, again, has been spotlighted because of the economic reality of the pandemic?
I think that there's an opportunity to connect across lines of difference. Right now, one of the things that people reach out to us about the most, whether it's an organization that needs consulting in diversity, equity, and inclusion, or social impact leaders who are under-resourced, who are looking to get plugged into the number of opportunities that still exist during the pandemic, is that I don't know where to begin. Yeah. I don't know how to connect with somebody that I don't normally connect with. And I think right now, because of the number of online opportunities, there's really no excuse. Before, we did not have the opportunity, maybe because of public transit or any number of reasons, to get around to the different places across South Florida to connect with folks. And right now, excuse me, people are being able to connect in ways that they haven't before. So I think it's like wonderful opportunities like the one that you're providing for these kinds of connections right now, but also reaching out and searching for them across the internet and saying, okay, I really can have agency over what I know, what I understand, who I connect with. And we have really a great excuse right now to inquire and expand our sense of community.
Definitely, yeah. Well, Amanda, Corey, thank you all so much for chatting with us. And again, as Tom mentioned, 800-743-9576 if you want to call and connect with us and share your thoughts. And we're also on WLRN's Facebook page and streaming live throughout this 9 a.m. hour. Thanks so much, you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Share your story with us, 800-743-9576. How are you staying connected to your community during this pandemic? Is it Zoom? Is it FaceTime? Are you doing conversations 6 feet apart with neighbors? Let us know. Share your story with us here live in the 9 a.m. hour, 800-743-9576.
Welcome back to WLRN Connects. I'm Lance Dixon.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Today, we're talking about how you stay connected to the people and issues that you care about during this pandemic. 800-743-9576. That's the telephone number live during the 9 a.m. hour to connect with Lance and I. 800-743-9576. We're also streaming live video on WLRN's Facebook page and our YouTube page. And in fact, Neri sent us a note wanting to know, all right, who am I looking at on Facebook Live? Lance is the one on the left, if you have the video up. I'm the one on the right. We also got a great comment from Lovely Jones saying, I think that many individuals who aren't able to travel because of the pandemic can access many ways. Lovely says, I attend a script writing class weekly that in New York City and in Florida. So it has really opened up and expanded my way of networking, right? I mean, it really has kind of obliterated the difficulty of transportation because we are stuck at home as long as you have the digital connections in order to make those connections. If you got a phone, you can connect with us right now, 800-743-WLRN in the 9 a.m. hour, 800-743-9576.
And speaking of connection, the theme of this morning, joining our program now is Nikki Lopez. She's a content creator, graphic designer, and she also hosts The Circle Live. Good morning, Nikki. Thanks for talking with us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. And Nikki, so for folks who might not know, what is The Circle all about?
So The Circle is something I started a couple of years ago in an extension of some of my work. I'm an artist and cultural programmer and creative activist. So The Circle is a space where every Tuesday, 8:30 to 9 p.m. Eastern, I go on Facebook Live under Nikki Lopez Creative and YouTube, and I talk to artists, activists, social entrepreneurs, grassroots organizations, people doing great things in the world today.
Gotcha. Yeah. And in that way, I mean, you know, the pandemic has kind of adjusted a lot of our normal structures and all this stuff is happening virtually or digitally. But you've had some experience with this now. You've been doing this for a while. And so what was it like for you to know that, okay, I've got this expertise, I've been doing this for a while, but I won't be able to have those in-person, you know, connections anymore and kind of bring people together in spaces?
Well, for me, I just always wanted to stay online. I know there's a lot of what I do in art and advocacy and supporting, whether it's other local artists and organizations and people that I know. So I know that people are looking to me and relying on me to get up to date with whatever is going on. So normally I would have those interviews mostly in my home studio in Fort Lauderdale. However, with the pandemic and being safe, I didn't want to risk bringing people into my home, but I still wanted to maintain that online presence. So I had to really pivot and reimagine and spend a lot of time going through like chat groups and what's available and some of the other ways that we could connect, and really had to kind of reimagine parts of the show and get set up with a program, which now instead of bringing people into my home, I can now send them a link. They click on that link and they're able to connect, which actually does a couple of things for me, because now my reach of who I could have on the show is broadened. And during that time, another online and physical magazine, Outkick magazine, reached out because they saw what I was doing. And they said, hey, we really love the breadth of your content, who you're bringing on. You can have anywhere from an artist to a voodoo priest to, you know, just different levels of community engagement, people doing things in, and they love that variety. And so now I've expanded to being on YouTube and on another location simultaneously. And so it allows me to keep people online and keep that going. There have been some people who said, wow, I missed that connection between you and that guest,
sure,
which I hadn't even taken into consideration, but now they're able to reach out and see more people.
Nikki, it's Tom. I'm wondering how the separation has affected the conversation or the topics, what you talk about and how you talk about it with your guests now that you can no longer share the same physical space with them.
So some of the things that I had to do is, now that my video is going a lot farther, I had to learn to brand it and so that it looks nice and it looks, you know, anywhere someone finds it, but also able to bring in some of the interviewees video links and different things they share. Like someone mentioned a little earlier about this race reckoning that we're going through now and the pandemic. So people have questions. Like I brought in someone who is an Ayurvedic practitioner who who talked about stress levels and talked about immune system and having a strong immunity in this time. I was able to provide listeners with a discount code for some of the products that will keep them healthy. I was also able to bring on artists who are not just only activists, but talking about different forms of activity. You know, not everybody wants to go in a protest line, or some people feel protesting is the only form of advocacy. And so we talked about, what does actually defunding the police look like? What are some of these trigger names that people are sometimes misusing for intentional reasons, and really explain it and giving people different opportunities to connect, to do the art, to express their form of advocacy.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm just curious, Nikki, you know, what are you kind of looking forward to when you are able to, or when we are able to, you know, gather for, you know, those in-person meetings again? What's kind of been in your mind as you think about that?
I think some of the things that just being able to see someone in person and get that smile, you know, directly, and to be able to touch and hug people. I know right now we're worried about social distancing, but there's definitely, you know, one of the things I loved about when I would do my physical events is bringing different groups of people together in a physical space to show how we could connect. A lot of times we're open, but we still stay in our bubble of comfort zone. So when I'm doing my art shows, I'm specifically picking people that represent different groups to get them there. I've had to do that virtually. So to be able to bring that back, and now there's a lot of people who've never heard of me or the work that I've done or the different people that I share. So it brings in a larger audience to say, what are you doing here? I didn't even see how that was connected. So I'm looking forward to that. There's still different projects that I've doing that I had to pivot to express it virtually. And upgrade, you know, I've always maintained a social media presence, but really upgraded to get that engagement online, yeah, and giving support.
Nikki, you've talked about this in previous media coverage, your experience with the religious cult. As a child, you had a parent who was involved with the religious cult, and you were involved with it. That must have been isolating. Was it isolating at that time, as you reflect back on it?
Yes, extremely isolating, because, you know, for me, art was a way for me to escape and actually a survival tool. So not being able to change your circumstances was very traumatic, especially growing up in that and you getting used to that and having to break away from that. So somehow, you know, there's a couple people I grew up with, they're saying, hey, everybody had a social distance, but we kind of had a little bit of a background, so we feel a little bit of a head start with dealing with something that's really traumatic, whereas it's like you have to stay home. So in some ways, I have a little insight to just trauma in that way, but just also it was, you know, just being around, you know, feeling like where I'm at, there's something wrong, or there's something that, you know, like I don't have the words for it, but you know, it was better than what I was doing here. I had to figure out, you know, to go into the unknown, really.
Have you drawn upon that experience at all during the pandemic in terms of the isolating factor?
Yes. So right before the pandemic, I had started a Facebook group that connects to the circle. So it's called the Circle 19. And it has mostly the people that I've interviewed, which, again, is a rich, you know, collection of artists and community people. And so during the pandemic, I really leaned into the group as to be a source for resources, whether it's, you know, someone sent me a link to an LGBT group that's giving LGBT folks $100 if they need, or people giving away food, or where can artists, you know, I'm an artist too. So a lot of my teaching art residencies got canceled, workshops, yeah, things that got canceled. So helping other artists like myself to figure out, okay, you know, one friend, she does yoga. Now she's doing virtual yoga, and I help to push that. And what are some resources, but also going to Zoom and using that as a space where we could connect and share, and bringing in someone to do like a breathing exercise, something that connects us. And, you know, I've really been intentional about when I call, I'm FaceTiming, I'm Zoom. I want to see people's face and that we could see faces. And it's been really important to me and other people.
Definitely. So we have a caller here on line one. Goes by the name of DJ Mad Lynx. DJ, you are on the line. You're on the radio.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Well, as a DJ, obviously, what I do is essentially the antithesis of social distancing. And during this particular time, it's been an extreme challenge to be able to do things that, you know, you would, as a DJ, make people dance and interact and whatnot. I'm sure probably many of the listeners have heard of a live stream by DJ D-Nice, which took place on Instagram. And it kind of booked the internet for a little while. It had everybody from basketball legend Dr. J, Michelle Obama, and others. Well, a lot of DJs tried to follow suit, but what many of us were not aware of at the time was that Instagram worked very closely with D-Nice and the record companies in order to facilitate this live stream party. I think at one point the live stream probably got up well over 250,000 viewers at one point. But as other DJs tried to do this, we kept on getting knocked off because of the copyright and licensing issue. Yeah. Gotcha. And the really sad thing about it was that, again, DJs really just wanted to try to not just practice their craft, but give people a little bit of entertainment, a little bit of hope, and a little bit of good times while being at home. And we just consistently got knocked off. Many DJs actually ended up getting banned. And, you know, it's a really unfortunate thing that, as many entertainers, we just tried to, again, bring a little bit of joy to people's homes and lives during a very, very sad time and a very isolated time. And unfortunately, these record companies didn't have the foresight to allow us to be able to do that.
Gotcha. Yeah. So what kind of workaround have you found then?
Well, there's been some Zoom parties because with the Zoom aspect of it, you kind of don't really get the record companies kind of like listening in with the algorithm to see if you're playing a Michael Jackson record or whatever the case may be. The issue kind of becomes that you really have to pre-plan that. So the numbers are nowhere near what they would be just by an organic, let's say, you know, Instagram Live or Facebook Live feed, because at that point, any of your followers are able to kind of say, oh, wow, they're doing that. You know, the Zoom situation, as I'm sure most of us are well aware, has to be much more planned and inviting.
Totally, yeah, gotcha. So on line two now we have Heriberto, who's the director of the Miami Cultural Arts Center, wants to talk about how they're connecting. You're on the radio. Morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, thanks.
Well, I'm here at the Miami Hispanic Cultural Arts Center. We've been trying, of course, like everyone else in the arts world, to create new programming to connect with the community. Most of the program is being online now. But we are trying to produce our events and stream them live directly from the center, just like the artists. Like last week, we had a concert, and we have an interview, poetry nights. And so we're trying in some way to keep the community, at least their minds, a little bit away from all this situation through the arts.
Gotcha. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for sharing that with us. Yeah.
Nikki, that can be such an important point that Heriberto mentions. Is it's a release. It's a art or just conversation. The art of conversation can be a distraction and an appreciated and necessary distraction from the crush of headlines and how stepping outside of our homes, the pandemic. It greets us either through, you know, having to wear a mask, seeing other people wear masks, going for walks and having neighbors move to the side by 6 feet as you pass each other. There are reminders of the pandemic and the public health measures taken right in front of us mm-hmm. all the time. And having that art of conversation, that connection, as Heriberto says, it's so important because it does fulfill another need that each and every one of us has as humans, which is that social interaction.
Absolutely. And that's what most of my work is geared around. So with arts and advocacy, that's an umbrella, and, you know, engagement, community conversation. The project What's Your Elephant, it uses the arts to talk about anything unspoken. So, and when I find when I do these groups, whether it's, you know, people like to hear different stories of people they don't know that exist in the community, or maybe they know that person, don't know another part of them, or having these Zoom calls where people could connect. The more people share, like what, if I share something that's traumatic that happened to me, or that, like, you know, hey, I'm doing all these things, but I'm so tired. It gives people permission to say, okay, this is what I'm going through. And with that, gives someone else the permission to say, you know what, I went through that last week. This is what I did to help. And so when, you know, when I don't, when I haven't done the Zoom call, people will check in. Hey, when are we doing that again? You know, there's, you know, all races there. There's all age groups there. There's a high schooler who is having some trauma, you know, thinking like, I've been through 4 years. Now that I'm graduating, there's a pandemic. I have my uncle who's, you know, on the front lines. I have a mom who's passed. You know, what do I do? And you have someone says, wow, I'm a photographer and I lost all of my gig work. You know, someone said, you know what? I've been hearing people going on live and do, how do I make money from it? Can I do a Cash App? And so having that space to be uncertain and to encourage others to try, that, you know, hey, if it goes out, guess what? We're live. It'll come back on. And so people need that comfort. I need the comfort. So I'm also sharing things that, not saying, oh, I know all these things. I'm sharing things that has helped me, and I see how it's helped other people.
Sure.
So yeah. And I think that's the important part.
Definitely. Yeah. I want to get to one more caller really quickly. Narissa in Fort Lauderdale. You're on the radio. Morning.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks.
Thank you. So I wanted to call, first of all, to acknowledge Nikki. She inspired me because of the circle to coordinate my own online forum with other arts education teachers. She was, we did something called Arts Ed Matters, and she was one of our panelists. And we were able to discuss during Teacher Appreciation Week the importance of art education, particularly in the time that we're in right now. And I was able to, you know, talking about the art of conversation, I was able to connect with a curator at a gallery, a YMCA, a development associate, someone else who supports arts educators, and Nikki herself. And we were really able to connect with a lot of people online who were really concerned about.
It's great, though, Nikki, you know, to see, I guess, that that your work has already been inspiring some folks, continues to. So, yeah, you know, thank you for that, Narissa, for sharing that. And Nikki, thank you again for joining us this morning. Nikki Lopez with The Circle. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about how one stays connected during this pandemic. Is it civic engagement, a social issue that you care about, people that you love, that you enjoy spending time with? How are you finding the ability to spend that time with people? 800-743-9576. That's our phone number, 800-743-WLRN. We're also streaming live video on WLRN's YouTube page and on our Facebook page. And Lance, a few comments there. On Facebook Live, Terrence sent us this note saying, I'm the curator and museum director in Miami, and this has given me an opportunity to work on my own craft as well as work on things that speak directly to the current climate. Yeah, spending a little time on the things that that you're passionate about. You have more time maybe since you're not spending it in traffic or elsewhere. Daniela also sending us this note on Facebook, maintaining an online presence is so vital now and for multiple reasons, family, work, community service, church, and much more. Absolutely, Daniela, keeping that presence up there for the public, but also for private reasons. And we're going to talk more about how to stay connected and hear more of your stories. 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN as WLRN Connects continues after this.
Welcome back to WLRN Connects. I'm Lance Dixon. And in this hour, we want to connect with you all about how you're staying in touch with the people and issues that you care about during the pandemic.
I'm Tom Hudson, 800-743-9576, our live phone number during this 9 a.m. hour. We're also streaming live video on WLRN's YouTube and Facebook pages.
Masks are mandatory in most public places in South Florida, but, you know, one exception is with exercise, even though, you know, we should still keep our distance from each other. In some areas, those roads can get crowded with bicyclists who are out for a weekend ride or runners who are getting together for some runs. And joining us to talk about, you know, that specifically, how the pandemic has impacted their run club is Cynthia Reyes-Bernard and Bob Bernard. Cynthia is the president of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Road Runners Club, and Bob handles membership for the club. Good morning to both of you, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, and thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Definitely, yeah. Thanks for joining us. So what was the moment like for you all when you realized how, you know, COVID-19 was going to change the way your club operated?
Well, it was really tough because we love getting together with everyone. We're like a family, our running club, and we really miss seeing all the groups that we normally do, you know. So it was a real tough thing thinking that this was going to be suspended for a certain amount of time.
Well, and also we have races that we put on almost every month. To know that we typically get anywhere from 250 to 350 people at our average runs, and to know that those folks are our extended family, and we wouldn't be able to see them either. So what we ended up doing is we have them all as virtual runs now.
Gotcha. And go ahead, Cynthia.
And we, you know, we're keeping the price down. We're making it reasonable, and we mail out a race number and something to go with the event, whether it be a visor, a patriotic visor we did for 4th of July. We did for Mother's Day. We sent out tiaras to the ladies, and we're just trying to keep it fun and keep them connected. We do a Facebook live stream start for all of our events, the day of the event, and everyone can run from wherever they are and then post after pictures and comments.
Cynthia and Bob, it's Tom. I was going to ask about what a virtual run is, because virtually I'm a sub-3 marathoner. In reality, I'd be lucky to do it under 6. So describe what a virtual run is.
Well, but basically, a virtual run is you'll be running or walking wherever you want to, be it in your local neighborhood, or you can go to a park. But you'll be basically, for the most part, running by yourself. And so we actually, it is timed. We have everybody go off at the same time. We do a live feed start where we do the national anthem and have some messages. And then people after the event can actually post a picture and their time and kind of create a community of runners that did it virtual. So it can be, we're actually, our next one is in 2 weeks on the 25th.
Right. And the timing side on it, we use your Garmin. And then it can be tabulated. You can send it in.
Or fit any of the watches.
One of the chips, yeah.
We don't, of course, have awards, but it can be tabulated so they can feel that a competitive thing to see how they place. And our next event, like Bob was saying, is our Fun Fit 5K on the 25th. And that's a little bit different because every half mile you stop and you do push-ups, sit-ups, squats, burpees, lunges. It's a little different now.
Every half mile. So it's a bit of a challenge.
Gotcha. Not very much all-encompassing. Now we want to bring in Kobe Morales. He's the co-owner of the iRun company. Kobe, thanks for talking with us today.
Hi. Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah. And Kobe, you know, similarly to what we were talking about with Cynthia and Bob, you know, what was it like for you when you got the word that, hey, you know, big groups are not advised, we've got to keep our distance, you know, things like that? And how did you adjust?
Well, since the beginning of the pandemic, I've been working firsthand with witnessing how the Miami community of runners have approached this new reality. Gyms were closed and people started quickly to realize that, you know, the only potential safe activity out there was running outside. And actually, there was a point during the month of April that I personally never seen so many people out there running in Miami, in Miami streets. And now the gyms are back open. You know, the amount of people running outside has decreased to normal levels. But, you know, we have gone through phases with the pandemic. You know, most organized running groups stopped running altogether for obvious reasons until this day. And in our case, we also stopped our running groups on Mondays and Saturdays. But we kept running away from the city, like in the Everglades, very, very remote areas. with our most devoted and fastest runners, you know, and we keep them motivated. And, you know, when you run, you improve your self-esteem. Your body releases chemical endorphins, and, you know, they trigger positive feelings in your body. Most people know that as a runner's high. And that gives you a positive and energizing outlook on life.
Yeah. And I, you know, just question for all of you all as we kind of get to wrap up here. You know, what are the rules that you all sort of have in place for members who participate with you, or social distancing and those sorts of things?
Well, besides the obvious, you know, keeping your distance, wearing your mask, you know, wash your hands. We implemented safety guidelines to all our runners from day one. When you joining one of our groups, and it's very basic, you know, breathe in your own space, and keep constantly moving during breaks to keep the distance, you know, just constantly moving to make sure we keep that safe distance. And that's basically it. Yeah. What we've been doing, you know, and the reality is, after more than 4 months uninterrupted running outside and helping people, I personally want to believe that, you know, staying active and living healthy is helping our runners to keep a strong immune system and giving them less chances to contract the virus, even if the risk is still exists and is out there.
Gotcha. Yeah. And unfortunately, Cynthia, if you want to really quickly.
Oh. And for us, you know, we actually provided our group with masks. A couple of the girls made for us, and we had gaiters that they wear around their neck. So if you get in a situation when you are running and you're going to pass a group, you can pull that up around your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, of course, it's not recommended to wear a mask during exercise, yeah. But that would be helpful. And we stand yeah. far apart in our group.
Yeah.
And it's actually safer from what I've
gotcha.
Been told
yeah.
to run side by side and 6 feet side by side and not
Cynthia and Bob, we got to run. Sorry
yeah,
about this.
Sorry about that.
We're coming up to our finish line as well. But thanks to everybody for connecting with us here on WLRN.